Welcome to the Roma Press Podcast with Jun Solano and Andy Mattioli.
All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Roma Press Podcast. We hope you are doing well. The gong, it's not officially sounded yet, but we are here to go over, obviously, all of the recent January transfer market deals for Roma, review the latest, go over, obviously, Tommaso Baldanzi, Angelino, who we talked about in the previous episode a little bit, but a new hero. He has entered the realm of folklore before even taking the pitch, simply by way of the shirt number he has selected. Very rarely do I ever purchase official IS Roma kits. Of course, his.
But can you do it? You the family man with kids and everything. Can you do that?
No, each have one. They each have one of Lukaku. Oh. But Angelino,
it would be a weird parenting move to get your kids a 69.
The Angelino shirt number. Well, first off, you know, anybody who selects a shirt number that runs completely counter to typical footballing culture, which is why, even though the club has gone to smithereens, Chievo Verona.
Yes, the guy with the zero.
Come on. Well, him too.
No, it was the guy with the one.
Come on. Number 56. My favorite. But 69, just...
Poetry.
So before we get into the new hero, our Spanish hero, Angelino, we have to say thank you to our newest patron over at Patreon, Dominic Llorillo, and of course to all of our other wonderful patrons who make all of this possible. If you would want to join the madness for the group chat, other things as well, early access to episodes, patreon.com/RomaPress, and of course on YouTube, at IS Roma Press, like, subscribe, all of the usual things that you hear on every other YouTube video. All right, Andy, let's go. Let's start before we get into my new hero, Angelino. Before we get into that, let's start with the obvious, Tommaso Baldanzi. So the deal is now official. He joins from Empoli. And this one is really an interesting one because... this is sort of the behind the curtain things that it doesn't ever really come out when certain players make transfer moves. It's one of those sort of mundane stories, but I want to give a little bit of background on it only because I know it really well. So this deal, and this is where I have to give a lot of credit to Thiago Pinto, who later on in the episode, we will get into him because obviously he is on his way out. Baldanzi, the only reason right now he is at Roma is because he switched agents. He switched agents 2 to 3 months ago. He was previously with a guy I've mentioned on here a number of times, Federico Pastorello, who, if you just Google him, he is the embodiment of like what most Western, like American television or films, when they think of like this suave, the typical like well groomed handsome Italian guy, like he is the embodiment of that.
He was Fabio. He was Lukaku's agent,
and he was previously Federico Pastorello, the agent of Romelu Lukaku. He was also the intermediary. I've mentioned this one on here a number of times for the deal involving Malcolm. He and I again every time I revisit anything involving him. I see those messages from that day involving Malcolm, and it is nothing short of parody.
Right.
But
Baldanzi switched and made the correct...
He switched in late October. And the reason he switched from Pastorello to a guy that Thiago Pinto is very close with, an agent that he has a strong working relationship with,
Beperiso.
And that is Beperiso.
Beperiso.
So he switched because in the summer... he was supposed to, Baldanzi. Yeah. It was done for him to go to Fiorentina. It was all completed, but there was a complete 180 when Castrovilli, he fails his medical with Bournemouth. And in turn, Fiorentina, they cannot complete the deal for Baldanzi. So that operation blows up. Baldanzi becomes irate irate. And less than 3 weeks after the summer transfer window shuts, like 3 to 4 weeks within that time span, he tells Pastorello, out, go back to your home in Monaco where you avoid tax. You're out. Peperiso in. And just because of that simple switch in agent, that is how Roma are able to get Baldanzi, because Peperiso essentially for Baldanzi, he started from scratch, zero. He didn't re-engage anything with Fiorentina. He had interest from Roma. There were some things with Milan. There were other clubs that were extremely interested in him. However, it was Thiago Pinto who had the upper hand. He had the inside lane, and he got it over the finish line. And this is, again, this is one of those things that I've talked about on here before, and it's one of those, again, one of those just sort of minor, uninteresting details. But a sporting director, it is just not about negotiating who you bring in, who you bring out. It is about maintaining, harvesting relationships with these agents. That is something that Sabatini did extremely well. However, there are some agents.
I think in the good, and that comes with in the good and the bad, right? Because we all, well, you know, yes. Like what's Napoli's problem like right now? It's they're hostage of Giuffredi, the famous Giuffredi, who Roma made it a point. Roma made it a point not to deal with Giuffredi. You know, when they discharged the likes of Juan Jesus and Mario Rui, it was because of Giuffredi. So a lot of these agents, you know, you get on their good terms, but soon enough they'll be running your market, right? And so
yes,
with Roma in this case, the good relations stem from the fact that Beppe Riso is the guy who manages Gianluca Mancini, Lorenzo Pellegrini, so guys who are important to the club.
No, previously, Cristante, not Pellegrini.
Pellegrini. Who does Pellegrini have?
Oh, come on, man. Yes. The guy who looks like Zoolander. Yeah, come on.
The guy from Bove.
Yes.
Yeah, and
the guy who once I am done doing anything involving football and I go off into the sunset, I have two voice messages from Giampiero Pochetta.
Oh, okay. Ah, Pochetta.
Screaming at me, screaming, because as we remember, he is also the agent of Grégoire de Frel.
True.
And I had reported.
Yes. Good times.
Yes, he and I were speaking, and I in his messages, well, he doesn't speak English. He's not going to watch this. In his messages, he said, Sampdoria has no money. They can't afford to make the deal for him permanent. And I had put that out there, and he responds with, I still have them. They are art. I'm going to keep them. Those will be the first thing I put out into the world, because they are, again, parody. But anyway, getting back to Peperiso, yeah, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, you have Thiago Pinto with a very strong working relationship with Peperiso. Now, if we want to go back to the prior regime, the guys of, Monchi, Sabatini didn't have a great relationship with Peperiso. But Thiago Pinto has a very, 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 very strong relationship with him. And as you said, these relationships, for better or for worse, they can be a pain in the backside or they can be extremely helpful. In this case, obviously, it was extremely helpful. That is the reason Tommaso Baldanzi is at Roma now, because he selected Peperiso. And I have to commend Thiago Pinto for this, because it would have been easy to kind of mail it in this last month.
Well, yeah. How many times have we seen? I mean, think of Sabatini's parting gift to us. Mario Rui and Juan Jesus. Those are his guys. That's his last transfer window. And Gerson. And Gerson, obviously. That's his last window. That's his parting gift to Roma, you know? So I think, honestly, this exceeded expectations. And, you know, I honestly think when you look at this window, when you look at the sudden shift in the kind of players that Roma began targeting, I'm not here to go and criticize Mourinho or Thiago Pinto's collaboration with Mourinho, but I do think that these collaborations entail, you know, a certain compromise that perhaps did not work out, you know?
Mm.
Like, if you look back on this time and you think to yourself, well, why was this transfer window so different? Like, it started with Roma being linked with Leonardo Bonucci.
Yeah.
It started with Roma concretely pursuing Leonardo Bonucci. It ended with them not prioritizing a defender, actually offloading Kumbulla, sending Kumbulla on loan to Sassuolo, and signing instead a small, physical, tiny fullback who can cross the ball, like Angelino, and a small, tiny replica of Paulo Dybala. So yes, completely different profiles and a completely different idea of doing the transfer market. That, in my opinion, it hints at something, because Thiago Pinto, you know, for a lot of things that he may get criticized for so long, he used to be given that same old remark of, well, he needs an Italian director next to him in order to guide him, you know, the kind of shit that Paolo Fonseca sure. used to get. Remember when Paolo Fonseca was recommended to have Serse Cosmi as his assistant? You know, are you like, these are the great things that great minds like Angelo Mangiante have on during their press conference. These great thoughts.
If it was anybody else but Serse Cosmi, I'd say forget it. But the fact that a bald man with a bald cap is always just, again, yeah, a hero.
It would have been brilliant. But for so long, this whole idea was Thiago Pinto is incompetent because he's not a sporting director. He doesn't know people. He doesn't know football. He doesn't have a network of connections. Well, these deals so late in the window, because both Angelino and Tommaso Baldanzi happen only 3 days to what, a few hours before the transfer deadline. These deals don't go through if you don't have the right connections, if you don't make use of the opportunities that present themselves to you, because the offer for Baldanzi was only submitted yesterday in the late afternoon at Italian time. Yes. So this all happens within such quick moments. Baldanzi was scoring a goal against Juventus at the stadium on Saturday. So,
right,
you know, and here we are Thursday and he's already posing with a Roma shirt. So all these things hint, in my opinion, at Thiago Pinto being good at what he does. But the project that Roma chose with Mourinho entailed something different. So in my opinion, the Thiago Pinto that I see now doing these things only a week away from him leaving the club permanently make me think that, hey, for example, a year ago, he doesn't go for Gini Wijnaldum, you know? Like, because certain things don't happen with Mourinho here. If Mourinho correct. Was here, Roma would have probably done everything they could have to grab somebody like Soyuncu and deliver that additional center back to Mourinho so that he could play with more defenders and feel more secure because Marash Kumpula is recovering from an injury. No, instead, here, Roma took a gamble, but they took a gamble that, in my opinion, shows that they are already planning something. You don't invest in someone like Baldanzi, who, mind you, is not a loan, it's a permanent deal. You don't invest in someone like him if you don't have already an outline for a long-term project. A long-term project that will more than likely scrap the previous long-term project. And hence, that's why, in my opinion, all these ideas of, oh, well, Mourinho wasn't offered a new contract, the future. Well, because I think the Friedkins came to the conclusion that something was dying, that long-term project of the big names, of the big... No, that the, if you can sign all the big names that you want, but if you don't win, then it really matters not that much, right? If you fail to reach Champions League football with Gini Wijnaldum and Paulo Dybala and so on, then what's the use of the big names? Then perhaps it's better to secure some outgoing transfers, in this case, Matias Vinha goes back on a permanent deal. This obviously doesn't count towards anything right now, but it counts towards the balance sheet.
Correct.
Andrea Belotti hopefully goes out to Fiorentina, impresses, and then can be sold. Kumbulla recovers from the knee injury, impresses, can be sold. The club wanted to get rid of Zeki Selik on a permanent deal. Doesn't happen, but the thought process is clearly the thought process of a club that is aiming for something bigger than just the January window. So can we say that for the first time in God knows how long, the January window for Roma is not only a minor success, but it's also a reflection of what we want to continue doing in the summer, which is rare, because usually this is a window that is sort of like a, hey, do you need a Band-Aid? Here's a Band-Aid. Here's a temporary solution. And off you go. Try and make the best of what you can with the rest of the season. Whereas in this case, this year, the January window is, in my opinion, a window into what Roma will try and keep doing in the summer.
That is something I wanted to talk about a little bit more with you before getting into some of the guys that already left. It's easy, or it would be easy, to spend 15 million euros. I know in this world of, you know, the Saudi Arabia, where they just give obscene amounts of money, or the Premier League, where...
Mind you, the Premier League, this is a funny update, John. The Premier League spent 10 million euros less than Serie A in this window. After Everton's punishment of 10-point deduction, the Premier League did zero to nothing in this window. So we're seeing some developments.
That is interesting. Now, admittedly, I did not know that. But you touched on something that I wanted to expand upon, because there is a 15 million euros is 15 million euros. However, 15 million euros for somebody like Gini Wijnaldum, so to speak, or a profile like that, is much different than 15 million euros for somebody like Baldanzi. This is something that I think is a very clear shift in mindset, to go with what you said. It's so easy to spend 15 million euros on a known entity, an established player, somebody with high name recognition. That is very easy to do. But this is something in the January transfer market, especially, that you just do not see often, where you see a club making a very large investment. Just, I know, again, in this day and age and time where we see all of this money being poured into certain players, that 15 million is very easy to dismiss. For Roma, this I can't underscore enough, and I think for those who maybe not fully understanding of Roma's financial situation, or even those who perhaps just might dismiss the amount as that underwhelming or not that much to begin with, I can't underscore enough how big of an investment this is. Forget the fact that it's January.
It's huge.
Roma are under financial fair play restriction from UEFA. The books of Roma, okay, they're not good. The Friedkins have put in just obscene amounts of cash since they've arrived. Almost to make billion. This sort of investment in January is a welcome surprise, because, again, it's so easy. You can find hundreds of players that you know by name, that you are familiar with, whose game you have a very clear understanding of, somebody who you can insert them into the formation with a very clear defined role from the day one. With Baldanzi, this is obviously a clear statement of, okay, we are going, I don't know if roll the dice is necessarily the correct term, but we are going to take a bet, I guess, on a young player who just about every club in Serie A likes and admires. We're going to make a big investment in him. And by the way, 20% to Empoli in the case of a future resale, also huge. I mean, a fifth of the transfer fee going 15, to Empoli.
15. Filippo Viola process 15.
15. On top of the 15 million euros, and that is including bonus, everything all in. That is huge. That is huge. And again, compare. Forget. I know you mentioned the Premier League barely having spent, but look at the rest of Serie A. Is anybody doing this right now? You would be hard pressed to find.
No, the 15 is a huge amount of money for any Serie A club at this moment in time, especially at this moment in time. And also, especially, this is not the window where you make signings that are aimed at the future, usually.
Right.
Usually, you know, Juventus just signed a very impressive talent from the championship. They signed him on loan with almost a 50 million euro option, which I don't see happening for even for a club like Juve. That's an obscene amount of money given also the situation that they are in. So for Roma to make this, in my opinion, these 15 million on Baldanzi in this moment in time is more impressive than if Roma were to pay, say, 35-40 million for Lukaku in the summer. Because again,
100%, yes.
Because this shows once again that something changed. This is not a player that you bring in a few months ago, you know? Like, this is not the kind of profile that you go after. Or this is also not the kind of demeanor that you have as Roma for a player that you like in Italy. We all know what happened with Frattesi, right? We hesitated too long to pull the trigger. And that gave Frattesi time to reconsider. Again, who is Frattesi's agent? So, yeah. So, all of this, in my opinion, just shows that clearly something changed within the club hierarchy. The fact that you bring in Baldanzi and he speaks so highly of De Rossi cannot...
Yes.
I mean, you know, he said the coach wanted me. Now, I don't know what to think, you know? I don't know what to think, what happens behind the scenes, because here we are talking about De Rossi as if he was somebody that is well-established, that, and meantime, it's been 2 weeks that he's been here as our head coach, you know? So, and Angelino, again, it's another player that clearly the profile does not fit a player that Roma would have had on their radar with Mourinho here. He's small. He's not too. He's not the kind of guy that will walk up to somebody else and intimidate them. He's more about technicality rather than physicality. Yes. So that's something that Roma under Mourinho did not need, right? That's why you went after the likes of Bonucci and Soyuncu, because big, burly defenders with a lot of strength and heading abilities and so forth. Mourinho leaves and Roma completely turn 180 degrees and look the other way. And I cannot help but feel like this is sort of the prologue to what will happen in the summer. To me, this opens up a box of questions. Questions about De Rossi's future. Questions about who is the sporting director? Because next sporting director, obviously, after Thiago Pinto. Because again, these are signings aimed at the future. At least Baldanzi is. We'll see about Angelino, but Baldanzi definitely is. So who is the next sporting director? What is the strategy behind that? And just overall, are we definitely done with whatever took place, until last summer? Do we, you know, is that gone? Is that project dead in the water? Because I have a feeling that right now this is the message that the Friedkins are sending: is we tried the first time, we got a trophy out of it, the Conference League, very nice, but now it's time for a change.
Yeah, absolutely. I think too. I mean, again, this is going to be one of those things that sort of goes underappreciated. But I mean, just the fact that Thiago Pinto was able to sell Matias Vinha for 8 million euros. Again, I know that doesn't sound like a lot. Roma, they paid 11 for him. This was a guy who has done nothing.
No, he has two Premier League goals with Bournemouth. Hey, I'm here trying to supply you with the facts. The recent
third choice at Sassuolo. A Sassuolo that is abysmal.
Yeah.
An abysmal Sassuolo.
Yeah. We actually got 9 million for Matias Vinha, one in add-ons. So should be good.
I mean, just the fact he was able to do that too. I mean, it is impressive. Now, As for the rest of the sales, as you mentioned, Belotti to Fiorentina on loan, Kumbula on loan. If you talk to his agent, he makes it sound like there were so many clubs interested that wanted to make a move for him. It's like, eh. Were there, though?
Because on loan, but also, I mean, the guy
if who has Roma were able to March. Monetize him, because you want March. To talk about somebody who weighs heavy on the books of Roma.
Of he's one of Kumbula's the most.
Kumbula's one. Yes. So, I mean,
you have Kumbula, as far then, as... you have Zeki Salik, supposed to move to Marseille, doesn't because it's not a permanent deal. Salik is not convinced of Galatasaray. Then, so that falls through. Shomurodov falls through. He was supposed to move to Salernitana, stays at Cagliari, where he's unlikely to play. So that's a useless loan right there. So there are some situations that we still have to deal with. But all in all, when you look at what Thiago Pinto was able to accomplish in this final window, he tried to take the broom and clean up. The fact that Spinazzola is here, that Sanchez is here, it's because you cannot change the will of somebody who is set on earning a big hefty payday. And that's, for example, what Spinazzola is after. So that's
that is
made, as you said in the last episode, when you didn't get rid of him last summer.
That should have been addressed. That is the fault of Thiago Pinto. But before we just put a bow, I suppose, on the legacy of Thiago Pinto, what grade would you give this transfer window out of 10, what would you give the January transfer market 2024
right.
of Roma? Because for me right now, it's like, I would say like a 6 with the ability to move to a 7 or an 8, depending on how Baldanzi does. Because seriously, I and this is obviously all.
I've heard you in the past give much higher grades and then justify them by saying because just by the name, it's incredible, you know. Just
no,
by
but
having-
listen, the Spinazzola thing weighs heavy on my thinking of it only because I've had to talk to the same Bissell of his agent.
But that's not a January issue. The Spinazzola...
It prevented you from being able to do more in January, though.
No, the Spinazzola thing, as you said, it's an issue from last summer. So, okay. In my opinion, the Spinazzola thing, and in this case especially, you're talking about a guy who is only months away from becoming a free agent. That's always a headache. Always. Look at what Napoli are dealing with Zielinski, who is also bound to become a free agent. So, this is, in my opinion, this is, you know, it's stuff that belongs to the summer when you should have sorted it out.
If you cut my leg off, it doesn't affect me only in that week. I'm going to have to deal with it in 2 weeks as well. That's my thought on it. Because by the way, though, yes, it was a summer thing, but there were, now, unless Roma Thiago Pinto hired somebody to put a gun to the head of Spinazzola, which I obviously am not advocating, there were options. I will just say that. But as I mentioned time after time after time in recent weeks, this guy, he was going to get his payday. And part of me, and I never said this to his agent, but it was, how do I put this delicately? There was some very clear self-sabotage going on because he knows damn well that asking any other European team to requesting a wage above what he is earning at Roma, he knows damn well nobody's going to pay that. He knows that. So part of me thinks a lot of this was half-hearted on his part to make it look as though Spinazzola was just not trying to ride out his final days at Roma. But you know what? He signed the contract. If he wants to do that, that is his right.
Of course.
So
it's a 6. Blame. It's a 6. Okay.
It's a 6. If they were able to sell Spinazzola, I would put it 7.5 and then up to a 9 if Baldanzi becomes really something important. But the Spinazzola thing weighs heavy in my opinion because you are able to bring in at least one more important name, perhaps two, if you are able to, if he is gone. That for me is why I give it that grade. What about for you?
I mean, I think we're talking. In my opinion, it's a 7.58 because this is it's again, it sent a really strong message with the if he had managed to get a loan with obligation for Celik to Marseille. But again, these are things that also depend on, for example, in that case, Marseille needed to offload one player in order to get Celik in. So these are things that sometimes are beyond your control. But had that fallen, had that gotten in, Celik to Marseille, it would have been, in my opinion, a perfect window, all things considered, because I really had very low expectations with regards to Spinazzola. I mean, again, if you're looking for a payday in January, who cares? You might as well wait some more months and see a look around. Right. Renato Sanchez, honestly, who's going to go after him after seeing the kind of mediocre experience that he's had at Roma so far? Nobody's going to interrupt his loan and try and sign him. You know, like, that's not going to happen.
Correct.
Those two guys, in my opinion, are on the margins. For me, it's very important that we got Kumbula out, because that's clearly a guy that, hey, if he's sitting at Roma after returning from the ACL injury, there's no way he's playing. Just no way. Especially correct. If you consider that Chris Smalling might be coming back. Hey, I don't even know if we can mention his name, you know, now. Then you have Andrea Belotti. That's a drastic decision. That's another thing that impressed me. Some people will disagree, because some people will say, well, now you have the bench is not deep enough, but it's a decision.
I was surprised.
It's a clear commitment,
yes,
that, hey, in this system, Azmoun is the guy, okay, to back up Lukaku. And if Azmoun is not there, then we'll figure something out. Like, clearly, it's the idea is this did not work last season, and it's not been working so far. This is Belotti. The kind of player that I saw against Hellas Verona in those final minutes is a player that mentally is completely not there. And now think about this situation, John. When we came on here after Milan, what did I say? I said, why the hell is Andrea Belotti the one going in front of the microphones and talking about the team and the state they're in and about Mourinho, if this is a guy whose future is being questioned live on television? So, yes. And in fact, 2 weeks later, he's gone. So that tells you all about the situation Roma were in after the Milan defeat. It's so evident that something had been broken inside. So that's why I give the high grade, because I think that this transfer window, at least the final 2 weeks, in addition to that, the Huizen deal for free and okay on those conditions of a dry loan, but in a situation where you desperately needed somebody, great. But the Huizen deal
is fantastic, especially if they find a way to make it permanent somehow.
If they manage somehow to get a conversation going, great. But in my opinion, those final 2 weeks of this transfer window are excellent because they have a purpose. How many times have we been wondering about in January, praying that somebody, anybody will come through, praying that a championship side will send us their reject, or that a team that is bound for relegation in the Spanish La Liga is going to give us an extra defender. You know, in this case, it was straight to the point. We want quick players, small players that know how to dribble, that are good with the ball at their feet. We want to play with possession, and we're going to get players who know how to play in possession. And that's what Daniele De Rossi got.
I mean, that certainly fits the mold of Baldanzi. Before previewing this Cagliari match, let's put, I guess, sort of a final chapter on this thing of Thiago Pinto. I mean, for me, these 3 years, it doesn't really even seem like 3 years. It has gone very quickly. I mean, where does this guy sit in terms of just in the history of the Roma for you? I mean, high regard, low regard. Obviously, history often does not remember the context of situations. There's just the concrete outcome of certain events. For me, this is a guy, anytime you look at his record at Roma, you absolutely have to factor in the UEFA constraints, the new ownership of the Friedkins, Jose Mourinho, obviously, having to adapt your transfer strategy to that. So I think he did overall very good work. I really like him. I don't know how others feel of him, but I think he overall, I thought he did a very strong job. What do you think?
I thought he was very professional, a very professional executive that compared to his predecessors was lights out in terms of not only how he carried out his deals, because we all remember the kind of person that somebody like Monchi was, and we all remember the kind of person that Petrarca was. Petrarca is still talking about acquiring Chris Smalling, and he's been out of a job for 4 years. So
it's the year 2050, and he's still speaking.
Come on,
man.
So Thiago Pinto, in my, just like Paulo Fonseca, you know, it's like Paulo Fonseca, people look at his elimination from the Europa League against Manchester United, but you look at the squad that he went with in that game to battle with Manchester United, and then you see what we're really talking about. We're not talking about Mourinho against Real Sociedad. We're talking about Paulo Fonseca going with Gonzalo Villar up against Manchester United with Edinson Cavani. No, in all seriousness, Thiago Pinto, my opinion, is much his work is very valuable given what Roma were up against. As he said in his press conference not so long ago, when he first, it wasn't a press conference, it was an interview with The Athletic. When he first came here, Thiago Pinto had on Roma's roster about 72 players. And so that is what he was working with. He had to trim the fat. He had to get rid of guys whom the world of football had long forgotten about. He had to deal with all the rejects, everything, all the leftovers
Pastore,
from
Inzonzi.
The final days of the Palotta regime, from the Petrarca days that were brief, from the Monchi saga that turned out to be a long-term disaster for the club. Thiago Pinto was there, and you can question his status as general manager, because we don't really know what that entails. We can question his scouting abilities, whatever it is, but he was brought in more so as an administrator to get Roma back on track, because Roma were way overboard. Roma were sinking, and Thiago Pinto's job was to get them back on track. Now, obviously, it's never going to be perfect. I can list you two shopping lists full of players that Sabatini got and were complete busts. And with Thiago Pinto, we can argue. Yes, Eldor Shomurodov, one of his first investments, it went south. Matias Vigna, one of his first investments, also not really useful in the long run. Renato Sanchez, a huge gamble that is now not paying off. But the work that Thiago Pinto carried over to, as you said, adapt to the new manager, Mourinho, which, in my opinion, that alone in of itself is a very difficult job, especially given the strict financial fair play circumstances. The whole momentum that Roma were coming off of with Palotta not being charged anymore, the whole transfer market for a whole summer was being run basically by agents and intermediaries with no sporting director in sight. That is what Thiago Pinto had to clean up. And that is what Thiago Pinto took upon himself. And I totally understand if after 3 years he's gassed out. I totally understand also if after 3 years, the Friedkins feel that if you want to go somewhere else, if you want to go in a different direction, you must also part ways with Thiago Pinto. But in my opinion, if people look fondly at Sabatini, at Walter Sabatini, and continue to look fondly, and rightly so, the conditions that and circumstances that Sabatini walked in were completely different. He was faced with a different reality, also a difficult reality, if we remember those years in the 2010s. But Thiago Pinto, since Sabatini left, did a marvelous job in order to put Roma in a situation where they can succeed, but also do so in a way that does not kill their future. Because what Monchi did, Petrarca to a lesser degree, obviously, because Petrarca was a maniac who couldn't sit patiently and quietly for 40 minutes. He had to lose his shit and walk out on the club and then sue them or whatever he did. I don't remember. And but Monchi, for example, tore the club apart in decision-making that seemed had no logic in sight. And instead, I feel like everything Thiago Pinto did throughout these 3 years had a goal. It may have not worked out. Gini Wijnaldum, it doesn't work out. But that is out of his hands. The fact that Felix Afenagian goes slam dunk on Gini Wijnaldum's leg.
Right.
Some things may have not worked out. That's the work of a sporting director. That's the work of a general manager. Some things work, some things don't work. But Thiago Pinto was a big contributor to getting Roma back on track. So you have the Friedkins who pump money into the club, keep it afloat. But Thiago Pinto was there to trim the fat and get Roma to a place where they can at least breathe without having UEFA fining them, and worse yet, blocking their transfer windows and forcing the club to a different fate.
Yeah, absolutely. Here's our preview for Cagliari. The crap so win. That's it. There's no need to get into that. They're horrible. King Eldor, he won't be playing. He will be collecting splinters on the bench as he has all season. There's no reason for a preview. Just win this match.
Angelino might start. After all, he might start.
As he should.
If you consider that his competition is Leonardo Spinazzola or Rasmus Christensen. Well, Spinazzola should be back in training these days, but Rasmus Christensen as a left back did not shine against Salernitana. So I think we may have the first display of the tiny man from Spain.
Number 69, the hero, my new favorite player. I will be getting a shirt at some point in an upcoming episode. I will be bearing the number 69, Angelino, hero. We will leave it there. Until next time, ciao.